You are listening to.
Listening to.
You are listening to.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
BlackIsOnline.com.
Break!
What's up, y'all? It's your girl Casey Layman, and it's a beautiful Friday morning, early Friday morning. And Chris and I are up, ready to introduce you to this next episode of The Break.
Yep.
And this episode, we are talking about the new black.
This is a continuation of the last conversation we had regarding the body type and the color issues.
Yes.
We kind of delve into being black and having access. We also get into teaching your kids about race and being culturally black.
Yes. This comes in the midst of a really wonderfully rich podcast session. And we've actually had two this year with some of the original fam, and we've had some newcomers to the table. So I want to shout out Shelby, Darylin, and Rada, who I hope will definitely come back. I think, though, in this episode, just Shelby and Darylin are present. But we've had some really wonderful roundtable conversations, and we have some really, really good podcasts coming up in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I think this particular episode, besides us, it's Shelby, Darylin, Tash, Alicia, Jamie,
Toria.
Before we get into it, we did get some feedback that I want to read. We actually got an iTunes review. Black is podcast greatness, 5 stars. I've been listening to this show for about 2 years and have loved every episode. Husband and wife team, Chris and Casey, host this wonderful show along with a great panel of guests each week. They cover a variety of topics, and there is always a lively discussion or debate on every episode. Listen to The Break one time and you'll be hooked. If you like sports, also check out the Brothers Layman Sports Happy Hour. And that's from our fam, Lady Roe.
Thank you, Roe. Thank you so much.
And Lady Roe, who is also a huge podcast fan, of the big supporter of a lot of black podcasts. She also has her own podcast.
Yes.
The WPOV podcast with Ariel and Cess on the Right to Real Love Radio Network, hosted by Jay Mayo.
Right. And Ro is somebody who really, really supports this entire Chitlin circuit of podcasters. And for that reason, anybody coming into the game, support this sister in her efforts. She's listened to so many of us for a while, and that has made her into a master podcaster all on her own. So by all means, support Ro. Ro, thank you so much for the feedback and the 5-star review. We appreciate
it. Yeah, thank you. If you guys want to leave some feedback, you can do that on iTunes and Stitcher. That does help us out a lot. You can also get at us on our website, blackisonline.com. Mm-hmm. On Twitter, Black Is Online. Facebook, Black Is Magazine.
Did we get a chance to shout out our guests from last week? Our actual physical guests from last week, Kai and Letitia?
I mentioned it on the happy hour, but you can go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I want to shout out the sisters, Kai and Leticia from the Pisces Life, who are in Los Angeles and came through to the crib. And we just hung out. We didn't record. We didn't do any of that. We just vibed and spent some time. And it was so wonderful meeting you two ladies in the flesh, putting the faces to the voices. And you guys had Chris and I in stitches the whole time you were here.
Yes.
Like a 1-2 punch.
And Isley too.
And Isley too. Yeah. Isley and Kai are like this. Leticia, girl, I told you one can't hurt. One only child cannot hurt. Think about that.
But yeah, much love to them. Make sure you check them out at the Pisces Life.
Yes.
And just to give you a heads up, since there were a couple people who had asked us, we do have a recording coming up. for next week, where we kind of got into the Bruce Jenner interview and stuff like that. This happened all right before the whole Baltimore situation, so we will be discussing it at some point. It just may not be in the next couple weeks.
Right. As you all may or may not know, when the family is together, we try to get together monthly and record 3 or 4 episodes at a time. So sometimes we're not able to attack topics in real time just because we try to adhere to everybody's schedule and give folks a heads up. So forgive us for not giving you the Baltimore podcast ASAP, but just know that throughout the weeks, and I mean currently, we are having constant conversations with one another via text and on Facebook, and so the momentum behind what we want to say and how we're going to say it is building and shaping and forming itself, so that by the time we actually get to the mic, we should be able to give you something hopefully pretty profound.
Yeah, something a little different. I mean, we hadn't discussed anything heavy like this situation since Ferguson.
Right.
And, you know, we don't want to just keep repeating the same stuff. We want to kind of bring new ideas to the table every time.
Right. And this situation has definitely brought some different topics to the table, just based on the way the media is kind of fashioning what's happening in Baltimore versus some sort of the on the ground guerrilla recording that we're seeing. So it's definitely going to be a rich conversation for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, once again, we want to thank you for your continued support. For you listening and tuning into this and supporting the Black Is Network. So thanks again.
Yes.
And then here you go, the new black.
Peace.
Furthermore, but just like the the defensiveness of black people, I think this, for me, leads into the common brouhaha with his comments on The Daily Show. You know, if when you hear someone who's clearly as progressive and for the movement as Common is, if his Academy Award winning performance on the Academy Awards didn't make it clear that he is for, you know, the whole hands up, don't shoot movement, or the Black Lives Matter movement is a better characterization of it. But that folks got angry at him for saying that we should reach out. I can't paraphrase exactly what he said.
He said, "We're just trying to reach a hand out."
Something about
show love to the other side, and they'd be like, "Oh, he's a sellout." You know, he's a.
Some people did.
They absolutely did.
And I just want my people to relax.
People hate on Common because he's like.
But you got Isaiah Washington. That situation you heard about them quoting him saying that as a black man, Chris Rock needs to adapt. Like, would adapt being pulled over just because he's black driving a nice car? He's saying get rid of your Bentley and get a Prius so that you're not pulled over by the cops.
And that is the epitome of ignorance.
Right.
Because let me tell you,
but look where it's coming from, though.
Right. Well, Well.
Oh, so he on that pull your pants up?
Well, Isaiah Thomas just kind of, and I don't know his background, but
Isaiah Washington.
Whatever, I'm sorry, I'm bad. Let me tell you something.
You're talking about the basketball player Isaiah Thomas.
I will mess up anybody's name. Really it is not personal.
Isaiah Thomas.
I know which one I'm talking about, y'all. But I will mess up your name. I don't care who you are, rich, white, poor, black, I don't care. So he strikes me, though, as a person, even during his heyday on Grey's Anatomy, as having a chip on his shoulder.
Or Love Jones.
Which is unfortunate, because he's a beautiful man.
He is a beautiful man.
And he's got a beautiful black wife.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, and he's a decent actor. So I just, but he strikes me as that black guy that
angry black man.
Went through some things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And because he went through some things, he has a very jaded viewpoint at this point.
You would think he would go the opposite direction, though. Instead of saying adapt, he would be like, nah, fuck the motherfuckers. Let's rise up, you know?
I mean, we hope.
Well, I had an issue with Chris Rock when he put out Top 5. Because he did all these white publications, and He talked about the racism in Hollywood, but he, and in this movie, he had a black publicist and a black manager, even his black cop. He had a sidekick who played J.B. Smooth. I don't know who he was, but he was black. Now, in real life, Chris Rock ain't never had no, maybe when he first started, when he was doing stand-up, he ain't got no black publicist, no black manager, no black assistant. So how you gonna tell everybody else to be not racist when you ain't brought a black publicist up to where you are? You ain't brought a black manager up to where you are. So how you gonna tell everybody else not to be racist when you racist against your own people?
Oh, no, I think Chris Rock will admit to that. It's Isaiah Washington we're talking about that's like, oh, adapt. Chris Rock is like, what? I'm a black man. I've been pulled over 3 times in 7 weeks.
But he still... He still grandstanded about the fact that there's still racism in Hollywood, but he doesn't see that he's the biggest part of
the problem.
It. Like, how are we ever going to rise to your level, brother, if you don't bring us up there? Mm-hmm. Somebody bought you. You know what I'm saying?
True that. And we do live in a time when there are talented black publicists, black managers, black accountants. There are a lot of talented African-American people that... you can work with, and it's just the bottom line. And that's not
to take me there, you know, get me there, you know what I mean? If I'm not there now,
you know, everyone has their own version of giving back, and that's a very interesting issue. Or because some people believe that, you know, they're going to get the best of the best, and everybody in the industry is using this lawyer. So I'm going to use this lawyer.
It's not about color, it's about them.
But I'm
using
money, yeah. Right? Everybody's got this, but I'm going to give this Boys and Girls Club some money. Mm-hmm. You kids do well. You know, that's their version of giving back. But for other people, their version of giving back is hiring a black
assistant manager,
and
purposes.
You know, letting that black assistant get exposure and, you know, giving them opportunities, because a lot of this is networking and who you know. And so some people still think that they have that going back to the neighborhood mentality. I'm going to do all this stuff and I'm going to come back to the neighborhood and everybody's going to be like, yay, you. And I'm going to drop off some money and like,
yay, you.
You know, but that's just the way things. Yeah, that's the way things were done for a long time. And I'm not saying that is exactly what he's doing, but for him, he may think that other ways of giving back to the community are, you know, suffice. And he has to make sure that he's securing his pot, you know, for himself.
He seemed like the type, he would be like, hell yeah, I'm racist. I ain't hiring no newbie just because they black.
Chris
seems
Rock.
Like that type, yeah. Like, he'd just
but
be ignorant about it.
Don't complain about racism. Don't complain about Hollywood being racist, then.
Right.
When you're a big part of the reason why it's racist.
Are you saying that Chris Rock is a big part of the reason why Hollywood is racist?
Absolutely. Because Chris Rock is a black man of power in Hollywood. And see who's surrounding him. Who he has around him.
Aww. Well, that goes to that point of who you have. I mean, I've heard that argument about like Nina Simone, where it was like you can champion black stuff all you want. We appreciate it, but as soon as you marry a white man, shut the fuck up. You basically once you married him, you're out the race. You're not you've exited the fight, which is like that.
We have a tendency to believe that if your public life and your private life don't match.
Mm-hmm.
Then there must be a problem. Like, that's one reason why this sister is tripping off of Kendrick. Remember that time we saw Talib Kweli in concert? Remember mm-hmm. that little moment? We was kind of like, wait, what?
He had like a little one of like serenading, and you bring a girl up on stage, and he brought like an Asian chick. And we were, and you know, you're just like, oh, you talking all that shit. But I mean, but then the actuality is like,
Kweli got a black wife, though.
Right, but then you're like, okay, well, everybody who comes to his show is not black. He can't act like only people that are his fans are black.
That's true.
But there are, you know, but we do have the moments like, damn, nigga, word.
Put on your album cover.
Yeah, like the shit went.
It wasn't even Talib by himself. It was like Black Star. So it was like, wait, come on.
Yeah, like that shit with Pharrell in his album. It's like, oh, why you ain't got no sister?
Right.
No dark-skinned woman on the album cover. He's like, okay.
Oh, I've heard about Mos Def, and that shit is broke. My heart broke in a million pieces with that one.
What?
The homie, he was like, Mos Def, he was like, that whole conscious shit you be seeing that brother do, that's his show. He like, he be in the club smoking Newport, smacking bitches on the ass. of all races.
That's hard for me because I love.
I was like,
I can see that.
Don't tell me that.
Yeah, he treats his wife horrible. He treats his wife.
That was hard.
Like, he was married to from Canada. He treated her really bad. He was like majorly behind in child support, I believe.
He was trying to go to Africa.
But how come when fools act, when guys act niggerish and it's for show, we don't give a fuck. We just like, oh, you know, 2 Chainz clearly has a college degree, but we're not like, oh, nigga, why you over here cooning on a damn record?
Exactly.
But if it's the opposite, you're like, oh, why? Just saying that, why are you acting conscious, but you really ain't?
Like, yeah, you'll actually justify it like, oh, so they're being strategic by dumbing themselves down.
Right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah,
we're not getting mad at David Banner for making the workout song, but this brother's got a, you know, advanced degree in Africanology.
Love David Banner.
Workout song was the shit though.
That's right.
But he does other stuff, and he's like, all right.
You know what? So I think well, we do. You know, like I will say this.
You're like, your
we have a good understanding, especially with men, whether it be Dr. King or we have understanding that, you know, even if in your public life or in your work that you're a race man and you deal with race like Chris Rock, that when it comes to how you live your life and your exploits sexually are separate things. They can, you know, the two don't necessarily have to mix. And that's just a division of labor that I think we make mentally for men of power.
Mm-hmm.
And it is what it is.
You have no
choice. And is this Chris Rock hate coming from the fact that he divorcing his wife?
You know what?
Okay, I just had to ask that.
That's a good question.
But I mean, that's...
I find that so interesting, especially in the way he's portrayed marriage in not only his stand-up, but in his films.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. Because there's a lot that you want to read. There's a lot, let me speak for me. There's a lot I would like to read into his life based off of what he says in stand-up about marriage and in the way he portrays it in film. But you just don't know. You're like, okay, maybe he's using his real life as fodder. I don't know.
I think he is. He didn't seem happy being married.
I think more so now. Now that he's actually come out and said, you know, I was just tired of being married.
Right.
I'm not a good person in marriage.
No. At least he's honest about it. Yeah. Shit, you know,
I
haven't had a problem with it because he said that. Like, just honest. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, we all would want someone to do that. I don't know if he's cheated or not. But before you make a complete spectacle out of our relationship, just walk away.
I think we accept it from Chris Rock because his brand matches who he is. His brand of comedy. Well, as someone like Bill Cosby, he can't go back to talking about women and slipping roofies on women after he's been Dr. Huxtable forever. Yeah. So his personal brand doesn't. But we accept it from Chris Rock because it lines up.
He didn't involve his rapist activity in his stand-up.
Did he?
No, he did talk. Oh, no, he has one stand-up. He had one stand-up where he's talking about, oh, these guys got this Spanish fly, and you slip it in their drink. But that's when the culture was different. You didn't have terms like date, rape, drug, and, you know, people were experimenting, man.
Spanish fly?
Y'all believe Bill Cosby raped those women?
We did a podcast.
Yeah, some, not all.
The question is, since you weren't here, do you believe Bill Cosby?
Absolutely.
That was a thing back with Tori. I believe he sexually harassed all of them. Do I think he raped all of them? No. I think he probably went a little too far with them. But I don't think he literally raped every one of them women.
Do you think he drugged every woman who said they were drugged?
Back then,
I do believe some of the women are there for cash.
If you have 25 people accusing you of something, then, you know, if you did 2 out of the 25, you're still fucked up.
Oh yeah, no, he's done enough where he's guilty. I mean, in terms of the number, he's done enough to where he's found. Yeah. I don't believe every woman, but I think he's done more than enough for him to get on trouble on some shit.
Yeah. She was very convincing.
I think celebrities are just really, really fucked up.
Agreed.
That's a good point. Because let me tell you something. The biggest lesson we learned from Bill Cosby, and this is my, I'm so serious about this, is these black celebrities need to watch themselves. Because if you think that these white people didn't know that Bill Cosby was doing this stuff and doing it with him all these years and kept it in that back pocket until this man tried to make moves, okay?
So he wasn't making moves before?
Well, he's
he was getting ready to do something.
He
bigger.
Lost his protection. Yeah. He had a protection of a he was bubble getting around him.
And right, he and he was it. Getting ready to make some big moves. Like he was like trying to buy a network or something. Like,
but he always gets blocked when he's trying to get into like Oprah Winfrey status. There's been a couple of times he's tried to make moves to purchase networks.
Right, and he gets out that back pocket. Out that back pocket. Out over and over again.
There's a reason.
That's why.
Like you can't. Like you gotta watch yourself. You really have to be careful.
Like, like before all the allegations, it just seemed like, oh, they just don't want to let a black man black, be in this kind of black. Control.
Yeah, right.
But now it's like, nah.
Bill Cosby was kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Well, that too. It was just like...
But I think that was the culture. I think it might come out later that Sammy Davis Jr. was raping women. I mean, I think that was the culture, unfortunately.
At the time.
That's just how it was. Women wanted to get on, and they would go visit, and they would get drugged, and they would end up with their panties down, and they wouldn't know what the hell happened.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. They just hoping, oh, I hope he called me back. I hope I get the part. I hope
that whatever I did,
whatever happened, right.
And it pans out.
I think
still men that aren't 100% sure that having sex with a woman who's unconscious is rape.
Right. I was going to say,
wasn't CeeLo talking about that?
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you don't remember it,
that's I'm like,
it can't be rape.
When, I'm not saying that Bill Cosby thought he wasn't raping them by any means. I'm just like, as far as the women, but I mean, as far as the women's responses, some of them may have honestly at that time like been like, I don't know if that is a rape. Like, I don't know
exactly.
Like, I don't, who knows what they thought when they
until
woke
somebody
up,
said, you know you were raped.
Yeah,
right?
Like, some people don't realize that would qualify.
They weren't given permission back then to think of that as rape. They were given permission to think that they were stupid for doing it. They were given permission to feel like they didn't have a voice and to not speak. And it still makes me angry that, you know. Look, yes, is it the best idea to go to this married man's house? Whatever. No, right? But it doesn't give anyone the right to drug you, and then have sex with you. I don't care if you just drug me. Full stop. It's not okay. It's not okay to drug somebody, period. No matter what happens thereafter, drugging someone in and of itself is a crime. And the fact that something else happened after that just makes the crime worse. I don't care what year it happened.
No, it's never okay.
No, that's
it's
never
It's definitely
right.
not
but
okay.
But once you accept money, after that, it's like, it's off the books. He can't be tried for it.
I know.
Yeah, and it's almost like you can't say anything. Mm-hmm. Or if you do say something.
Isn't that like a statute of limitations?
Yeah.
Oh, all of this is past the statute of limitations. Which is
so there's no reason for them to have come out with this at all. They're not benefiting in any way other than damaging his
reputation.
His reputation.
Right. Exactly. They are stopping him from being more successful.
I'm going to ask one more question before we wrap up. What do you guys think about all these comments about this new black? The new type of black person? The Pharrell...
Shelby said, what is that? What is new black?
Sorry, I was really asking. I really don't know.
How does Pharrell define... Just basically the black person that's colorblind from how I understand it. The black person...
It's that, real. It exists. There are kids who are growing up that don't know what it's like to, you know.
It's
they're blackish kids.
Yeah, and I know Torres wrote a book about it. Yeah. I really try to find an actual definition, but it seems like it's those you don't blame the institution for your situation. Mm-hmm. You don't blame the man, none of that. If you don't get ahead, it's your fault.
But they're
and that's
privileged.
It. And it's always like these people who like Pharrell's came out with it. It just feels like whatever is going on in your life, if you didn't get the job, it's because you wasn't good enough, not because they didn't want to hire a black person.
So you're saying there's no communal responsibility with this term new black? There's no tribalism?
No, because there's nothing communal about it. It's definitely focused on the individual, but it also erases the idea that there's any sort of institutionalized or systematic racism. Situations at play.
I can't abide by that.
Because I got into an argument with my mom about this, and I said, I get it. I totally get it. But on some level, isn't this what we fought for? We fought for our kids.
To be new black.
To be new black. What do you mean? Like, there's no difference between me and this white kid and this Asian kid. Like, we're the same. Like, I don't know what your problem is. Like, that's the mentality that we want it. But we at our level know that we're not there.
Well, yeah, that's just it. The society we live in doesn't reflect it.
But we taught our kids to think that. We as a society and not my family.
I hadn't thought I would like this idea, but even if the society isn't actually there, is there an advantage to having kids think that there's no there? And listen, if they discover that there is institutionalized racism, they'll discover it on their own time or however it unfolds. But to not necessarily, quote unquote, burden them with the idea that there is that obstacle right in the middle of their journey and see what happens on their journey if they don't have any concept of that obstacle right there.
It's deep. So does that mean that then we can stop delving deep into our history in regards to what we teach them? Because that puts the burden on you.
No, I think to only be an authentic new black, you still have to know your history. And you can have a history and have an understanding of 9/11 without there being, say, an emotional reaction to Arabs. You know what I mean? Like, or to the quote terrorists. But you have to have a deep understanding. You can have a deep understanding of the history without being reactionary. And also, too, because sometimes history doesn't have a real world application. So it's an intellectual idea, mm-hmm. history, and you can't apply it. But, you know, even in the stories that you're told through history, sometimes an experience will happen where you can apply it and be like, that's like this. And I wonder if that has a strain through this, and you allow the kids to figure it out on their own without feeding it to them. Is there something to taking that?
But I don't think approach? You can just just talk about history. As far as this new black, you have to talk about the fact that other black kids growing up in Detroit or Chicago, this is still going on. So you can't protect them from that. I mean, as long as I share the same skin color with my sister who's suffering in Detroit, then
Because new black is a very privileged new.
Yeah, and a privileged perspective. And I think it goes back to like what I was saying about empathy. So it's sort of like, I feel like I was raised in a very like sheltered race-wise environment growing up in the Bay Area with my mom being white, my dad being black. Like, definitely there was a time in my life that I did not feel like a difference just because of my race. And then once I was exposed to the world, even if I didn't feel it, I know it's out there. Mm-hmm. So there's no excuse anymore, in my opinion, to keep that sort of blindness because it's not what's real.
Right.
And so it doesn't matter if I can live my life in my little utopia in the Bay Area, it still is what is. And so to me, it's not necessarily a disservice in the sense, as long as you are going to be aware of it. When the part where it comes to kick us in the butt is like on Facebook with the black people, like, well, what about black on black crime? Like those kind of people that end up twisting it back to throw it in black people's face. And that's where it does a disservice, in my opinion.
Okay, I can get down with that. I guess I'm saying if you raise a kid to have an idea of social justice and looking out for other people and what it's like when someone is oppressed, and you also raise a kid to have an understanding of what the history of their roots, of their ancestors, of the people that they come from, what they went through, and how they got to be there. It doesn't mean that you necessarily have to place in that entire context of being a vigilant for social justice for people who are, you know, being miseducated or whatever in Detroit or wherever. It doesn't mean that they're automatically going to connect the dots and see institutionalize racism on the order that you do, because you can connect far more. You can connect far more dots. So, do you connect those dots for them, or do you allow them to connect those dots? So.
I think you connect it for them. There's
no way that I can tell my daughter about being a black woman, and our family's from Vicksburg, Mississippi, without talking about racism. There's no way I can separate the two. Whether she's the new black or not, she's going to know what the old black meant. You know what I mean? She's going to know where she came from. And
well, are you going to admonish her for not seeing racism as an issue, per se?
Me, I would.
As long as it's still going on. Absolutely.
My mom flashed on me just a couple days ago. I was telling her a story. I was having a conversation with one of my white friends, and she said something, and my mom was like getting ready to jump down my throat. I'm a grown adult, you know?
You were born in the 70s.
I was born in the 70s.
Yourself.
I did, but not in the way that my mom did. And my mom used to just drop bombs on me just randomly. She would talk about being at a lunch counter and, you know, this white lady telling her, you know, something. And I was like, it would always shock me because I lived in an integrated neighborhood. I went to I went to like a multiracial, multicultural school. I did, but I was always around a bunch of different cultures, and so to me it wasn't always about race. My mom made sure I knew, though, you know, and I joke all the time, she always made sure I know, you's a nigga, you know. Wow. Always. That's I had an aunt. I had an aunt who also used to, and she freaking worked for the president. She was like so established. She still is. But she used to when she was in the house with us, she referred to us as colored. And I would be like, why are you calling me colored? What does that mean? You know? No. But she kept, like, it was very... I also had black art on my wall. That picture was on my wall. It is now up in my office. Like, there are so many ways that you can make it real. When she was in charge of shaping me, she shaped me to be open-minded and accepting of people. But she also told me about my history, and she told me how to protect myself. As a woman, as a black woman, she taught my brother the same thing. And I think that sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Look, we all have had tons of experiences where there's no preparation for someone really, like, you know, really gripping that purse when they walk by you, or literally calling you a nigga to your face. Mm-hmm. Like, all of that stuff is still, like, you know, it hurts when it happens. But when it happened, I was like, oh, this is what my mom was telling me about. You know, this is what my aunt was saying to me. And then when I went back to talk to them, it wasn't this brand new thing. It was a conversation that had already started when I was very young. So I think that it's completely possible to do it. I'm not saying my mom did it perfectly, but she definitely introduced it young enough and frequently and randomly enough where every time she could, she reminded me of, like, the reality, because I was very idealistic as a kid because I thought we could all, you know, coexist. Yeah, I just, you know, why not?
What does it mean for kids who are, their phenotype, they're clearly black, their parents are culturally black, but they themselves aren't culturally black, quote unquote. So they're like standard American kids. I think it's something you can only have of a black kid who grows up in a very multicultural major metropolis. So like San Francisco, LA, Seattle, where a kid can be like clearly like physically black and have culturally black parents. But then these kids, they're just kind of standard American, like skater or whatever kids, like. But being culturally black,
that's changing.
Is not something that they ever feel the need to do. So, or that they don't even, like, they walk into a room full of black people, a room full of all black people, and they would probably be like, oh, I'm not sure there's anybody who who I could relate to. Or if they walk into a multicultural room, they feel more safe. Like, oh, okay, there's a lot of different. But they walk into or like a black family picnic, they might think.
I think, you know what? I think it's okay because we're becoming more universal. Just as a human race.
Right,
you know,
right.
We're jumping on planes, going to Australia. You can't stop us becoming a melting pot. I think it would be wrong to say, well, because you can't connect with these group of black kids over here. You're not black enough.
Right. I agree.
You know?
But I think that's kind of what New Black is that there's a group of black people who look black, but who culturally, in the way that we are African-American, and not all of us, you know Negro spirituals, grew up in the black church, or, you know, what is...
I feel your eyes staring at me.
What is culturally black is a very... Right, the chitlin and chicken circuit. Right.
Broiled chicken circuit.
I think that's what New Black is. People who... And listen, not that I abide by Pharrell's comments or intent. I'm kind of wary of what he meant. And I don't know exactly what it is. I heard it, but I was like, brother, what's your motivation behind these comments?
Well, he doesn't have to be black anymore. He's too rich and powerful.
Well, I'm not even talking about him per se, but let's take the next crop of kids.
They're still privileged in a way that they don't really associate with.
Is that a privilege? Honestly, but if we want to think about it, is that a privilege?
It is. At the center of it, it's never race. No. It's coming back to money and economic status.
I think you could grow up on welfare in Venice, California, and attend a school out there and be like black, but not really be culturally black.
Okay.
And you'd be poor. So the money and wealth doesn't have a... But the
Going back to your point that only happens in like LA, right, Seattle.
Generally speaking, that's not going to be the norm.
No, you can have them in New York City. You can have them in San Francisco.
No, I said I go back to your point of the cities that this would happen in, because I don't know if this would necessarily happen in Detroit. I don't know if this would necessarily happen
in Atlanta.
But I do see it happening with my nieces in Texas because of where they go to school.
Right.
And
they go to a good school, right?
They go to a good school, but these children are confused. We're not going to really get into it, but these children are confused. You know, they really are. They really are because they're still in Texas. And so racism is real, you know, but they live a life that doesn't necessarily match that, you know. They live in the suburbs. They're privileged kids. Very privileged kids.
I think the suburbs is a good place to focus on this because I actually think that that's a lot of where it happens sometimes. But I also think that the problem is when you're young, like white people, especially in those type of areas where it is just white and black, and maybe there is blending and the new black or whatever, but then everybody grows up and then white people are white people.
Black people.
And good luck getting those white people looking at you the same way they did when you were younger, once they're grown on. Like, and that's where it's like, okay, reality check. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That new black, that was cool when we were younger. But now that's not working. And that's why I'm kind of like,
you're black. I'm white. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I'm like,
a black and white scenario. If you take a multicultural city,
but
you
multicultural
grow up with
is only
Vietnamese,
on the coast. It's not multicultural anywhere else.
But I think a person can live their life in New York and on the Upper West Side or in the East Village and have a very, and it will be sheltered. And even though they've been exposed, they've traveled to South Africa, they've gone to the Caribbean, to Paris, to Japan. I think a black person could grow up with an existence of never having to be culturally black.
Yeah, but I guess what is the question then? Because I mean, I'm not okay with that for my kids. Let's put it that way.
Like,
I wouldn't be okay with that.
What is the harm of someone, like, what's the harm of someone just being
the harm is that, like what we said from the beginning, we're not there yet as a race. And so when we start to give up, like, our youth in a sense, and I mean, this sounds very, like, dramatic, but I'm just saying, like, this idea of not needing certain, like, cultural, you know, things that we identify with.
Connections.
Yeah, I just don't think we're there yet. Like, white people aren't giving up their culture to come join us.
Shoot. You see how the, did no, you see the Justin that. Bieber
they're not
roast?
Giving it up. They're not giving it up. They might take, but right. they're not okay. giving
in
up.
In the right situation, okay. they would show enough take.
Yeah, take is different. Like, that doesn't mean that they're, like, you know, all of a sudden they're okay. black people.
I'll tell you what the problem would be. I guess, because I don't be running on. To me, the problem would be they would be okay with the system basically getting rid of all the, quote, voting rights, all of that, to make it where it's like, look, we know this system of inequality is around, and because we believe that this inequality doesn't exist anymore, there's no racism, mm-hmm. I'm not being judged at all because of my blackness.
Black.
Everything that was set into place to prevent people from judging me by that, let's just get rid of it. And let's just have everything where you can do whatever you want. And that's where we're headed now. Where people are like, oh, well,
that
to me is the problem. That would be the problem.
Which is why it's so important to communicate the history. You know, and that we're not really there to communicate the history. We're not equal.
So you know.
Period.
Yeah. So everyone's
so you know
in consensus that they shouldn't have gotten.
Where your grandmama came from, where your great grandmother came from.
The so they shouldn't have gotten rid of affirmative action.
Oh, affirmative action needs to be done with.
Oh, my God.
I love y'all.
Oh, that
I'm sleepy.
You curly? You twisted your hair. And I'm about to
go
thank you for listening to another episode of The Black Is Break. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the subject. Hit us up, let us know what you think. You can reach us on Facebook at Black Is Magazine, on Twitter at Black Is Online. You can hit us up via email at kc@blackisonline.com. Leave a message on the hotline, 323-455-4219. You can always check us out on our website, blackisonline.com. Thanks again.